Hello, everyone, and welcome to another amazing night of Fandomaxis Week Review. I am your faithful host, AJ. Greetings and salutations. So, Jamie is under joining us tonight. But Karen will be here shortly, and then we'll get rocking and rolling. So, what do we got tonight? We've got the premiere of Castle Rock. We've got Preacher, sadly, the series finale of Colony, and what might be one of the last three times we ever talk about the 100. Because you're still enjoying it, you're a better person than I am. So as soon as Karen gets here, we will get rocking and rolling. What else going on? Nothing. Something I've been doing recently, I've been watching some of the great classics with my son. We're currently on a Predator Alien binge. And it's really fun because it's been so long since I've seen all the Alien movies. And I forget some of the people that were in them. So it's kind of fun because you see some of the next actresses and it's like, holy crap, they got old, or holy crap, look how young they look. Oh, here's Karen.
Hi, AJ, how are you?
Hello, Karen. Good.
Great, what are you talking about?
I was just babbling while I was waiting for you. Artie and I have been watching all the Predator and Alien movies, and I was just saying how funny it is, because I forget some of the actors and actresses that were in some of these movies, to see how young they were so long ago, because it's been forever since I've seen the Alien movies. And the last one we just watched, Charles Dance is in it, and I've forgotten, and he looks so young compared to Tywin on Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
Probably.
Must be fun rewatching them for the first time with your son.
Yeah. And I have to say, it's funny because I forget some stuff too because I haven't seen them in so long.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Cool. Anyway, we don't have Jamie tonight, right? She's not feeling well?
No, she's still alive.
All right.
So, what do you want to start with? Do you want to start with the premiere of Castle Rock or the sad finale of Colony?
I'd say let's start with Castle Rock. That's sort of the big news of the week that this show is on.
Okay. So,
and I know that you. I did watch all three episodes. Okay. Well, we'll just talk about. I did. I watched three episodes. But that's okay. I know, AJ, that you have been very, very excited for this show. So why don't you start us off with your thoughts?
Okay. I only saw the first two. But everything very slow paced at first. It's got to introduce us to all the characters, obviously, and kind of give us an idea of what's going on. I mean, I tell you what though, it starts out kind of slam bang. I mean, we meet Terry O'Quinn's character, who is the warden of Shawshank Prison. And he's having a rough day because he starts his day off by decapitating himself. And I got to say, I'm watching this going, I don't know who wrote this scene, but they are brilliant. Because never in all my years would I have ever thought to not only hang myself by driving off a cliff, but tying it to a string.
Yeah.
That was just, I mean, you want to make sure you're going to go. That's how you do it. Like, the fact that he was going to decapitate himself never even crossed my mind. I just figured, the car was going to pull and there was just no way he was going to be out of it, I said. But because it was Terry O'Quinn, I said to Alyssa, I was like, the rope's going to break and he'll be fine. And then you see the blood splatter on the dashboard and I went, I don't think he's fine. So I got to
yeah.
say, quite a great way to start things off. And then we kind of, get What?
Yeah, I was really surprised. I did not expect to see Terry O'Quinn, who is one of the most familiar faces to mainstream audiences in the show, and who also, you know, appears to be the star in that the opening scene revolves around him, to die in the first scene. And I thought, you know, at first I was a little bit irritated that maybe I had been, you know, tricked into thinking he was the star. And actually, I immediately thought of, do you remember the show, what's that zombie show, Z Nation, that they had promoed pretty hard that Harold Perrineau, and then he dies in like the first episode and is not at all on the show, which was a little frustrating. So at first I was a little like, oh no, it's another switcheroo. But then, you know, he does appear in flashbacks in later episodes, and it appears that he's going to be, you know, still not only like a recurring and major character, but he certainly, whether we see him again or not, his actions have set the events in motion.
Yeah. I mean, I believe there's only 10 episodes. I think there's only 8 or 10 episodes. So, I mean, I don't know if he was in the third episode, but I know he's been in the first two because of the flashbacks. And that was the other thing, too. I had the same reaction. I was kind of like, wait a minute. I know I've seen other scenes in the previews with him in it, so there's got to be flashbacks, you know. You know, especially once we learn that he's had a kid in a cage for 30 years. Apparently he grooms his toenails and fingernails.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe let's put a pin in that and come back to that character, because I want to discuss, like, whether or not, like, at this point we think he's a good guy or a bad guy, so to speak. But I think we have to sort of circle around some of the other characters before we come back to that notion there.
I got a vibe from it. Have you ever seen the movie Frailty?
No, I've never even heard of that movie.
Never heard of Frailty? Oh, great movie.
Frailty?
Matthew McConaughey and Bill Paxton. Or Pullman.
Uh-huh.
Shit, which one? One of them. Paxton,
which one?
Bill
Paxton. Okay.
And the two of them, well, I mean, there's a family of three. It's him and his two boys. And the father, who's Bill Paxton, God has talked to him and has told him that there are demons, and he's given him the sight to see the demons.
Okay.
And one of the other sons can see the demons, but not the second son, and he thinks his father's crazy and his brother's crazy and everything. And throughout the whole movie, you're trying to figure out if they're crazy or they actually have the ability to see demons, you know. And that's the entire movie, you know. A really, really good movie with a great twist at the end. But that's the vibe I got from this first episode with the warden, because, you know, you're like, okay, is he crazy, you know, because when Panghorn's reading, you find out Panghorn's actually reading a letter that he wrote to him and breaking it all down for him about who this kid is and everything. And, like, you know, like he spoke to him and told him, hey, here's the devil. This is where he's going to be. Go lock him up. So I think that's going to be a big part of the show is, was the warden nuts or did God actually speak to him and this kid is really dangerous, which I think is funny, though, because when the warden tells him, he gives him the name of Henry, if he's so evil, why would he get a death row lawyer to try and help him?
Well, yeah, he's a really interesting character also, but why would a character who is really got a wrongful, like a kidnapping and wrongful imprisonment, kind of like a civil rights violation type suit, have a death row attorney, right? Like, that doesn't make sense, except that the call came for him. Like Terry O'Quinn tells him to call him.
Right.
So that, like, makes no sense at all. Except that, so there's the whole story of, there's the whole story of, Henry Deaver's backstory, right, where he was missing for – he and his father go missing. The father is found and eventually dies of his injuries. He fell down – we don't really know. He was found in the snow with a broken back, right, and he almost frozen to death. Henry's found with no – he's not even cold, no frostbite or nothing. And so it appears to me he has no memories prior to the day he was found, right? Like, did you see the scene where his mother gives him the birthday candle and he remembers nothing basically before that day that he was found? Which – and he has come home to town because of this mystery or whatever. AJ, you read a lot more Stephen King than I do. I have read some. This is like a recurring theme in Stephen King's work, right, where a character comes back to his hometown. And horrible things happen to you or whatever. So he's got this. I don't even know what to think of all that.
Well, I mean, Henry Deavers himself even has a little bit of a monologue about how evil this town is, you know, and how all this bad stuff happens. And the warden kind of has, you know, mentions that too. The one thing that kind of has me, I'm not sure about a couple things actually about the show. Because Needful Things, I don't know if you ever read that, but Needful Things was the last Castle Rock book. And Castle Rock is still there technically, but it's kind of no more. There's not much left to it. But in the show, it seems like Needful Things hasn't come to town yet, maybe. But Ed Harris plays Alan Tanghorn in Needful Things, and Scott Glenn is older than Ed Harris, and he also seems a lot more grizzled than the other two incarnations of Alan Tanghorn. So my problem is, as you know, a longtime Stephen King fan, I'm having a little trouble placing if this is supposed to be current time or like, well, I'm not quite sure what year it is. They just said screw it, we're just going to modernize it and kind of forget about some of the stuff from the books because we're not really basing it off that. We're just kind of like using the location and some of the history. But my problem is because Tanghorn and the other two times he's been in a Castle Rock story, he's a good cop. He was a state trooper, and I believe he was a detective too. And then he just got tired of all the craziness and everything and then he actually retired and moved to Castle Rock to just be a sheriff, you know, for petty crime and stuff because he got tired of all the murders and all the, you know, the big stuff, you know. He just wanted to relax. So both times, you know, in Needful Things and the Dark Half, he's been a good, hard-edged cop, but he's also been had an easygoing thing to him, and he's always had the ability to kind of look and have an open mind at some of the crazy, you know, of the history of Castle Rock. So, I've only seen two episodes, and maybe time has just, and crazy has just made him even worse, but he doesn't seem to be as good of a guy as he has in the past. I mean, so who knows how that'll come up. That's just something me personally that I noticed because I know the history. But I think he might be coming around. I don't know, because when he's talking to the new warden, who's played by Ann Cusack, and he's like, what's he say? Leave the fucking kid locked up.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, so I love the structure of the second episode, the way it's mostly told in Terry O'Quinn's voiceover. Warden Lacey does the voiceover, and he sort of, you know, he tells a story about how there's so much evil in the town. We're getting a setup here that there's something. Castle Rock is like an evil place, or something wrong is in Castle Rock, and that, you know, I guess by the end of it, we we believe, like, he clearly believes that God spoke to him and said, like, is this kid the devil or what, but lock that kid up and, you know, never let him see the day. And that, you know, I love how it evolves that you're like, is this guy lazy, crazy? It's what's, you know, but then Alan Pangborn's in on it. And now there are at least two people trying to protect the town of Castle Rock. And there's some sort of a, you know, are there going to be more? And like, Alan Pangborn really was kind of set up to be a bad guy, sort of, in that when Henry Deaver comes home, Pangborn is shacked up with his mother, and the mother, you know, Sissy Spacek kind of maybe has dementia, and Henry clearly thinks that Alan is taking advantage of the mother and, like, maybe mooching off her and whatever. And then, well, somebody says, don't let that fucking kid out, you're like, oh, wait a minute, maybe he's actually a really good guy here. And he did find Henry when he was a kid.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you I mean, it's hard to know what's going – it's way too early to know what's going up with these two.
Yeah, because it's all set up at this point, which I think is why they released all three of them to start with, because it's just kind of like – even though I haven't seen the third episode, I can kind of imagine where it's going, because it just seems like a three-hour premiere as opposed to three individual episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
– I like the setup. I liked all this about Henry trying to find his way to get into the, you know, how's he going to get into Shawshank and how's he going to, you know, how's he going to get in there and, you know, meet, the kid, and he ends up going to the church and all. So I loved all that also. I don't know what to think about. What do you think about the girl who lives next door?
Oh,
Jackie,
the neighbor.
Jackie
yeah,
Torrance,
she...
is that her name?
No, Jackie Torrance is the blonde from church.
The friend. Jackie's the friend, yeah.
Molly.
Molly Strand.
Yeah, the girl.
Molly Strand.
Molly, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's weird. I don't know. She eats half a, what was it, Vicodin? That she got?
Yeah, she's buying some sort of, like, yeah. Yeah.
Whatever. She's clearly got mental issues. She went behind her sister's back and forged her name on the mortgage of the house.
Yeah.
I get the impression that she knows a lot more about the night that Henry went missing and his father died. I don't know what she knows or how she might know it, but I mean,
well, she clearly was. But did you catch the scene where the police come to interview her and they're like, you know, Henry's missing. Henry's father's dead. Do you know where Henry was? And did you see the breath come out of her mouth?
Breath. Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And she has this like connection to Henry. And so if he's missing and freezing cold and she like has that steam coming out of her mouth was kind of like, whoa. And also what's the deal with the egg timer? Like when she goes down into that box and takes out Henry's things, she flips the egg timer. Like what would happen if she spent too much time with Henry's things? Right.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's about either.
Yeah. Like, she's definitely a conundrum wrapped up in an enigma.
Yeah.
I'm not sure
and at the lunch, her sister's like, you need to, like, you know, stop acting like this, and you're not going to, like, open a mall or whatever it is that she wants to do. And you know, the sister's, like, you know, getting on her. And Molly says that she has an undiagnosed psychic affliction. Like, Molly knows what's going on here, you know, right, when other characters don't.
Yeah.
I texted you during the show and I said, oh, this kid, maybe he's the devil.
Right.
Like could be that God told him to get the devil and hide him in there and never let him out. But I also feel like it could be that, like, I don't know, like in Stephen King's work, it could be that, like, an evil force tricked him into trapping a good person or an innocent person or, you know, God or whatever. I don't know. I have no idea what's going on right now.
I honestly believe that nothing is going to be at face value. But we don't know how long. I mean, what's the new warden mentioned, or the interim warden mentions that section of Shawshank has been shut down for 30 years. But we don't know how long he's had him down there. You know, we don't know that it's been the whole 30 years. Because if it's been the whole 30 years, there's clearly something with the kid if he hasn't aged in 30 years. I mean, for all we know, it's been 5 years. You know what I mean? That's an answer that we need to know to kind of get a better grasp on what you're saying could very well be right. I mean, he could actually think he talked to God and he was being spoken to by an evil force that is actually afraid of the kid because the kid is actually inherently good. And the evil force is afraid of the kid, which is why he tricked the warden into locking him up or something along those lines. But we also have those scenes with the guard, who is the guard that called Henry in the first place, when he's sitting in the booth watching all the video surveillance. He has that hallucination that the kid is out of his cell and that he's killed all these people, and then he only shoots the other CO.
That's right. Yeah.
When he goes out and everybody's actually fine. So there's definitely, you know, I like the fact that at this point everything is very vague and you're not sure what to think. Like, you're being introduced to stuff and giving little pieces, but not enough to make a true guess at what the hell is going on. I like the way it's being done.
Yeah. So I have watched the third episode, and I won't spoil it because there's some really awesome stuff in there, and yet I don't have the answers to these questions anymore from the next episode of who's evil and who's good and what's going on. And, you know, I mean, this is like inspired by the work of Stephen King, and so, like, anything could be anything, right? But it's definitely not going to be what we think.
Not only is it, you know, from the mind of Stephen King, but it's created by J.J. Abrams.
Who is
The Lost, obviously, and Alias, and a bunch of other stuff that we're just scratching our heads.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, we know it's, I mean, this is common ground for Stephen King that, you know, a man comes home to his hometown is like, you know, he left his hometown because it was a bad place and he's forced to come home to his town and confront evil. And Henry's probably the hero of this story. And can I just talk for a second about the awesome, awesome cast, right? Like, every single person in this is a huge actor or actress. And, you know, we've got Terry O'Quinn, Melanie Lynskey. Well, Frances Conroy is in it. I mean, Frances Conroy is just, you know, we know her so well from American Horror Story, which she won an Emmy for, and like 6 Feet Under, she won an Emmy for that, I think, also. And like everything that you've ever watched, she's in. Melanie Lynskey, who, you know, is on Suburgatory, I think, right now. No, she's not on Suburgatory. She has been on mostly in movies, I think we know her from. 2 and a Half Men, she was in all these great movies. She was in Drive, the TV series Drive. She's been in, like, I've just seen her in so much stuff. We've got, who else is in this? Kind of such a great cast. Sissy Spacek. I mean, come on. When was Sissy Spacek last time she was on TV, right? It's just an amazing cast. And I just feel like it's going to be awesome because these people would not sign up for the show if it wasn't going to be incredible.
And like I mentioned before, Scott Glenn, I mean, he's been
Oh, yeah.
Around forever.
Scott Glenn is like, yeah, Scott Glenn's been around forever. Bill Skarsgård, who I think he was in It, right? Bill Skarsgård plays the kid.
Yeah, he was Pennywise.
Yeah.
And Cusack is the interim warden. And I'm blanking on his name, but the guard that called Henry, he's an amazing actor. I don't know if you watch Shameless, but he was on Shameless, and he is.
Yeah. His name is Noel Fisher is his name.
Noel Fisher. Yep. Yeah.
Who was in a lot of stuff as a kid, starting out in Final Destination, and he's in Twilight, which is why a lot of people might know him. But yeah, he's really great. Yeah. He's a wonderful actor. And Andre Holland, who plays really kind of the lead role as Henry Deaver, who was in Moonlight, which won like every, he was in Selma and he was in Moonlight. The guy's movie career is like incredible, right? And then he comes and he was in American Horror Story also. And then Nick, and then he comes and does this. So it's just really incredible. Everybody should be watching it Wednesdays on Hulu. So we get a new episode tomorrow.
Yep.
All right.
All righty. So what would you like to talk about next? We have two good things to talk about. I want to do Colony last, since I want to save a good one for last. So it's either Preacher or The 100.
Yeah. Let's talk about The 100 real quick. Force ourselves
it's not going to be quick, but you start.
I was very disappointed in this episode. I think that we expected the dark year to give us some reasons why these characters are the way they are today. And I thought what happened during the dark year was well, but I feel like it didn't. Like I feel like so what happened in the dark year is they became cannibals to survive, right? I'm mostly, AJ, mad at you and me that we didn't predict this idiocy several weeks ago. Because when it was revealed, I was like, oh my God, that's so stupid and trite, and I can't believe I didn't, you know. And I don't like the way they position. I just don't like the way Abby behaved and the way Abby is portrayed throughout this, and that they're trying to put it on Abby and I don't understand how you can say making your people become cannibals is supposed to make Octavia more sympathetic. Like, we're supposed to feel sorry for her at the end of this. Every character acted out of character, except maybe Kane, and stupid, and every part, I wish I never knew what happened during the dark year. I wish they just left it that we didn't even know. I like the show less for having that mystery given to me. What did you think about it?
Okay, I have
you're speechless.
Saying, this is season four. This is season four, right?
This is season five.
Five, okay. Okay. Well, for 4 years, I couldn't say enough nice things about this show.
Mm-hmm.
Even during the alley years, even during our dark time, it was still better than this garbage they are force-feeding us now. I haven't looked that deeply into this, but I've got to believe there are new writers on this show or something. Because this is the biggest pile of shit I have seen on the CW that I watch ever. I mean, you're right. Every character acted out of character, and not just during the flashbacks of the dark years. Clark has been out of character all season. The only characters I find myself rooting for right now, and I actually enjoy, are Bellamy, Indra, and everybody else that was up in space. They're great. They're fine.
Yeah.
They didn't change at all. They left those people exactly who they were 6 years ago, and they're fine. Clark would be okay, I think, if it wasn't for Abby. I'm blaming everything on Abby. Abby is the absolute worst. She's a fucking doctor. Hey, let's eat people. Okay, the doctor in her says we need to find a way to survive. Cannibalism is the answer. Okay, fine. But when you tell a girl, and Octavia's been through some shit, but she's still a young girl, she's still impressionable when it comes to somebody like Abby talking to her, you need to make the people eat, because if they don't eat and they atrophy, there's not going to be enough meat on their bones for us to survive. You selfish, stupid bitch. You don't put something like that on Octavia. Octavia is already leading a group of people that she doesn't want to be leading. She's already got enough shit on her plate. And you have put something else on her that she can't handle. I think we're supposed to believe that Octavia went nuts. Because shooting those people the way she did was ridiculous. I really thought that she was going to hold the gun to them and be like, if you don't eat, you're going in the pit. If you don't eat, you're going to the pit. I didn't expect her to actually shoot people point blank like that to scare everybody else, starting with Kane, to eat. And I got to tell you something else. Did they cook the meat? Because I don't know what the hell that was. I realized
it was a beautiful square. It looked like a brownie.
it looked slimy. Like, did they cook it or
were
they eating
the meat? Like, it was raw?
Like, I don't get it. And I'm also very confused on what happened to the brilliant thing that Monty had set up for them so that they could survive down there for all that time. How all of a sudden, what's her face there is like, oh, everything's gone to shit and we don't have time to survive. What? Wait, what? Why?
Yeah.
What did you do to screw it up, stupid?
Well, and she's not a plant biologist, as far as I know.
I'm going to let it go off the hook. There is no reason at all we should have thought that it was going to be this stupid. That's why we didn't think of it, because it's so stupid. If we had come up with it and said, hey, maybe they're crazy because they're cannibals now, we would have laughed at ourselves because they wouldn't do that to us. That's too stupid. That's too easy. We need something catastrophic. This is not a catastrophic story. This is a lazy and pathetic and done-to-death story.
Well, I think you're right there, lazy, pathetic, and done to death. I was hoping for something with more nuance to it and to have a more nuanced decision that Octavia made. I find there's no part of me that believes Abby would give that advice. Abby's a physician, and Abby has counseled, you know, Abby has often been a person that counseled to save lives, not to take lives. Even when Abby was at her most annoying trying to save Clark over everybody else, there's nothing that made me believe Abby would actually kill innocent people, like butcher them for that purpose. And I don't buy any part of it where I don't buy that at all. That Abby was the first to describe it. I mean, the first to suggest it. Abby, like,
you know who would have? Jaha. I could have believed that shit coming out of Jaha's mouth. And then Abby would have been arguing with him. At least the Abby we were originally introduced to. There's nobody in this show that I recognize anymore. They have the names of our characters, but none of them are acting like them except for the few that I mentioned before. So
I also did not buy the part where Abby says, you got to get Kane to go along with it. If Kane is a cannibal, everybody else with it and be a kid. Like, why would the treat? Well, I don't believe it, because I don't believe that all the why? Because why would the grounders go along? It might get Sky Crew to go along with it, but why would the grounders like follow what Kane's always been hated by the grounders.
Right, but Kane was the first person when they first started eating. Kane was the one that stood up and said, "We always have a choice. We don't have to do it," because Kane started it.
Yeah.
If Kane not opened his big mouth in the first place, everybody else probably would have ate to begin with. That's why.
Except Kane was right. Except Kane was right.
Well, I'm not disputing that part of it. My problem is the story writing itself. So I believe we're supposed to think now, this is why Octavia is the way she is, because she doesn't want to share the Green Valley, and because she never wants to go through the dark year again. She doesn't ever want her people to starve again. So she's not going to share, because she's going to make sure her people don't have to eat each other again. That's what we're supposed to believe, which is the stupidest fucking thing I've ever heard of.
I found it really, I also really didn't like the part where it's portrayed that Abby, that Octavia had no choice, and then Octavia is almost, you know, they show Octavia almost crying as she's like, please just eat it. She's like begging them to eat, don't make me kill you. It is the unsaid thing. And she's almost about to cry as she kills them. And I don't like that we are supposed to feel badly for a person who is forcing others to eat human flesh. And we're supposed to, like, the idea that this is what made Octavia and she can't go back because she'd have to admit she did the wrong thing. And, like, I don't like them trying to twist it that this was a thing that Octavia had no, you know. And then later when we come in, Abby's like, then later when Abby's detoxing, Abby's like, it was me, it's all my fault. And I'm like, first of all, don't give yourself that much credit that you got 1,200 people to do it. And it's not Abby, it's Octavia. Octavia pulled the trigger. Like, Octavia listened to Abby and pulled the trigger. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's just,
and that's,
I can't
and that's
believe.
The problem lies because
yeah.
Octavia never would have gone along with it. She brought everything Abby was saying, hook, line, and sinker. And that's not something Octavia would have done. That is so out of character for Octavia. Octavia would have been with Kane and saying, no, there's another way. There's got to be another way. She wouldn't have sat there and been like, are you sure this is the only way? No, they would have found another way, or at least died trying. But that's the thing. What the show has done is, by Abby saying, it's my fault, that's supposed to, as the viewer, let Octavia off the hook. Oh, we have to understand Octavia now because, you know, Abby made her do it. That's what they want. It's not going to happen for me or you, but that's what they are doing. That's what these writers are doing to the people that they think are sheep that watch this show, okay? Those of us that watch The Hundreds, we're not stupid. Most people, you know, a lot of people aren't stupid. You know, if you enjoy mindless TV, fine. But if you're watching The 100, you're not buying this crap. And I really think, and even if their numbers are still good, I haven't looked into that either, I don't see the numbers continuing to stay good. Because I think a lot of people are like you and me, and they're giving it a chance, and they're waiting, and they're saying, okay, it's a 13-episode season. You know, everything's been great up to this point. We're going to give them a chance to write the ship. Well, guess what? There's only 2 episodes left. Their chance to write the ship was this episode, and they failed miserably, okay? And that's just what happened in the dark years, okay?
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the rest of it.
So for starters, I want Abby dead. If you kill Abby, it's a good start, okay? It's a start to maybe redeem the show, okay? Second, you got to kill Kane. Because this stupid son of a bitch went to McCreary after his people, he just ratted everybody out. He just ratted everybody out because he's not going to let the devil into the garden. Are you kidding me? The devil's already in the garden because the devil's Abby. They've got Octavia to agree to do this non-violently, okay? And you're making it worse. You are siding with this woman who would have just as soon killed you as look at you, and now you're going against everybody. You're going against all the people that just saved your ass and helped you that was in that cave with you. You're not just, the devil. Come on. I think Kane's a little out of character too, but he's closer to his character because of his past. I mean, that was Kane of the past that we're seeing right now. That was this is season one Kane that we're watching. Season one Kane would have totally done that. Not the Kane that has decided that there's a better way. His better way is going to get people killed.
He's making a deal
with the devil right now.
Well, and it's not well explained or described. Like, he's gone along with Dioza because he's decided that – I'm not really sure what – like, many of the first episodes were – it's positioned that Kane will do anything to save Abby. He's so in love with Abby who Abby, who manipulated him and used him to force other people to eat human flesh, right? Like, Abby was like, go, like, let me betray my true love, get him to eat human flesh, and you're all in on it. So, by all means, Octavia threatened to kill him, right? And he continues to be so devoted to her. I'm not sure why. I mean, I am
devoted to her because their last couple conversations haven't been that good. I don't know that he's quite.
No, and you know what? You know what, AJ? As I watched this week's episode, I started to feel that they're going to position maybe a Kane Dioza get together. I felt like, are we going to see later this season or next season? Kane Dioza are going to get together, and Abby's going to be on the outs of that,
absolutely.
And McCreary's on the outs of that, right?
Well, McCreary can't survive. There's no way McCreary can survive this.
No, he's too hateful
a
character. He can't.
Yeah, no. McCreary and a couple of his right hand, you know, some of his most trusted guys, they've got to die. Everybody else can be red-shirted into the show.
Yeah.
Vincent's
going to survive, but I felt like I was watching this thing where Dioza suddenly is good, right? Like Dioza, who's a horrible person also, and let's not forget that she's a terrorist who blew a bunch of people up, but apparently that's okay and forgivable. We're supposed to forget about that. I felt like I could really see that they're showing the two of them are going to get together. Abby's going to be out of that or whatever. Which on the one hand is fine and neat because Abby's annoying and I don't really understand why he would stay with her. I was a little surprised. Like, I felt like.
Go ahead, finish what
you're saying. Well, I also felt like they suddenly decided that Raven and Shaw had to get together. Which wasn't really.
Well,
I didn't really see that in their relationship.
Yeah.
Why? Because they're both single? Like, because Raven's not paired up? Not because really saw them. Like,
no,
well,
I just didn't
see it. All right, that's fine. I didn't. I felt like they shared, like, similar background and capabilities and intellect, but I didn't really see them as more than, like, colleagues and Raven being a good person and not wanting to die until all of a sudden, like, it's gone. Like, in this episode, I was like, oh, yeah, they're getting together. She's definitely, like, acting like, you know, she's mad at him, whatever other reasons. I guess it is shocking.
I saw a longing look.
It's shocking to me that they could turn this show around so much that one of my most hated characters of last season, Echo, is now really maybe the best character on the show right now. Echo
I
and Bellamy,
like
Echo right? Space Crew. I like Space Crew.
You know what?
Space
I like
Crew is the best
the
crew
most.
Right now. But
I like the way Echo took charge once they escaped the valley and they went to the cave. And Echo's given orders like she's in charge. I think, and it was great because. It gave us a chance to see the old Echo. You know what I mean? Like, I've always liked Echo. Even when she was being a bitch and she was trying to do everything for Rowan, and when she tried to kill Octavia, all those things she did made sense. You know, it was understandable for why she did this stuff. At least, you know, it was in her character. It made perfect sense. You know, did we agree with those things? No. You know, but she learned and came around, and you know, her story arc makes. Sense.
Actually,
I liked Echo, even when I hated her.
What I liked about her this week is that what I saw in her in these last several episodes are showing me why Bellamy fell in love with her. Because when they went up into space,
mm-hmm.
Bellamy didn't have like they barely tolerated her, and Bellamy didn't have a reason to like her. And 6 years go by and now they're in love. And I felt like that person I saw these couple weeks, that really capable, smart, good person, I believe that Bellamy could love her.
Yep. And how about that line that Bellamy says to Octavia? He gets her to agree to do it as nonviolent as possible. And she's like, okay, I agree. And she's like, so lay it out for me. He's like, well, Indra has all the information.
And walks. That was so cold.
And he walks out. He goes. Because I'm just going to save my family.
He says, I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it, to save my family. That was awesome. She deserved it.
And
she deserves it.
And the great thing about it is because she's not the person that she was, So, I get that 110%.
Mm-hmm.
She is not the person that she was when he left. So.
Yes, because cannibals, so it's all okay. You're supposed to feel bad for her because cannibalism. Yeah,
it's lazy. I mean, I was expecting, it's funny actually because last week I had said, I was like, oh great, we're getting the dark year next year to finally figure this out. And I was so pissed off at last week that I was like, after Octavia burned everything, that I was like, I don't care what her excuses are because they're not going to be good enough and that's the other, and that actually makes it worse now that I think about it. Her people were starving. They went to turn to cannibalism. She had to shoot some people to force them to fucking eat. And then Monty has this, the algae farm, which he can, and he even says, I'm going to be able to turn the desert back into green land. It's going to take some time and years, but I'm going to do it, and it's going to be great. And she burns it all. So she just, now that we learn why she is the way she is, it's the exact opposite reaction that somebody that went through that should have to an algae farm.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
No
she
sense.
Should have seen that as assurance that she wouldn't have to,
She could have even been like, if we lose, I want the valley still, but if we lose, at least we got something good to come back to. No, not anymore, because you're an idiot. And Octavia is an idiot. Writers of this show, I haven't seen a group of people destroy a really good show since The Walking Dead.
Yeah. I mean,
For all my bitching about Gimple and all the things we feel he did wrong and screwed up, it pales in comparison to what they've done to the 100. This is just awful. If this was the first season of the 100, I would not have ever made it past probably episode 3 or 4. Because I'd be like, this makes no sense.
It is a quick turnaround, and it's definitely a major mistake in only like 6 episodes to really undo a good show. And the only thing I can compare it to is what happened to Colony this season, which we're going to talk about next. Also a show that in 6 weeks was like really went from one of my favorites to one of my most like AJ. We're going to see what happens in 2 more episodes, but if this show gets renewed, I'm not interested in watching it next year.
Oh, I'm with you, Karen. I don't think I am either. That's what I texted you when I asked if you'd seen it yet. I don't think I am either.
Yeah. I'm sorry, the creators of 100, you let us
actually,
down.
You know what I'm really curious about? Artie's almost done with season 3. So when he gets around to season 5, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to stomach through and watch season 5 with him because I want to see his reaction and see what he feels about it. I'm curious to see if he has our reactions.
I think Clark's being wasted. I mean, the fact that Clark survived 6 years on the ground by herself with Maddie, and we've seen no flashback to that really or learned about it, and that no one really is giving, I've complained about this before, no one's giving Clark the deference or respect or credit she's due. I feel like I'd be interested in the story. What would interest me would be a storyline where Octavia's supreme power is threatened by Clark's return. Like they're doing the story where Maddie's a real knight's blood and Octavia's threatened by that. And I get they're doing that, but I'd be more interested in her being threatened by Juan Hita, like two former, like close friends being put at odds with each other. And I just feel like nobody is like, oh, look, Clark's alive. Yeah, whatever. We're cannibals.
and you know what? Actually, speaking of Maddie, I think she's done her character, I think, has been pretty good, especially now that she's the commander. I'm really enjoying her even more because she's questioning Clark. And she's going toe to toe with Clark. And I thought it was great.
And she knows stuff.
And Clark doesn't think about the fact that she has all these memories now. So when she brings up Mount Weather, Clark's like, oh, fuck. And she's like, well, it's different. She's like, no, Clark, it's not. We're on the wrong side of this war, and you're wrong. You know, and I love that. I thought that was great. You know, and I'm waiting. It hasn't happened yet, and it might never happen because the people writing the show are idiots now. But I'm really waiting for a quote from Lexa to come out of Maddie's mouth and have Clark lose her shit. I'm really waiting for that moment because I think that is something right there they could really make interesting.
I also think there's a lot of potential there for a storyline where she's got these memories, but they're not Clark's memories really, and there's a perception. Like, you've got Lex's memories of one side of what happened with Clark or whatever, and you've got, like, that has way more potential than, watching Clark detox. First of all, how did Abby's been on pills for 6 years and she detoxed in like 40 minutes and apparently now she's clean, right?
Oh, she had some kind of special medicine that's express detox.
Yeah. Right? Like, where did she get that? Hey, they've been living underground for 6 years. Well, and if she had it, why didn't she take it during the previous 6 years that she was a drug addict? Why didn't Kane give it to her? Why didn't Kane give it to her like 10 arguments ago? It just, you know, they're beginning to play lazy and loose with the details, and it's insulting to me as a viewer.
It's the reverse of if you see a gun in scene one, you know it'll be used by scene three. It's the reverse.
Yeah.
It's something we've never seen or heard of and doesn't exist in the real world, but magically, because we needed it for this moment, it now exists.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Again, it's more lazy.
Yeah, it was a really, really, it was a disappointing episode. It was not a worthy reveal to hold the dark ages, the dark year, until this late in the season, and then deliver that was frustrating. Everything that's going on with so one part that I did enjoy, we probably should move on and not dwell on this too much, but the best part of the episode really is Echo and Amori and Murphy, like, planning their ground operation to, like, you know, they've got all this back and forth with, like, Dio's notebook and what should we do and let's go steal this stuff. And then, of course, I was a little disappointed that they get, like, almost captured at the end, but then Shaw does his thing. And, like, that played out well until they have this, like, they pull the rug out from under us that Kane and Dio to go to McCreary, which we had no indication that could even, like, that's kind of not believable also, but they've got some plan to, like, I don't understand why they're doing it. Like, it's so important to them to not let Octavia, like, just let Octavia win. Like, she won't eat
you
anymore if she can have the valley.
And you know what else is going to happen?
And by the way,
Octavia and Bellamy are not in the best place right now. It's going to get worse because when the plan doesn't go as planned and Octavia is walking through and shit's not going the right way because Kane has betrayed them, she's going to think that Echo betrayed her and she's going to go after Echo and Bellamy's going to get in between them, and that's not going to end well. You know what's going to happen?
Yeah.
We're calling for Abby's head. We want Abby and Kane to die because we're done with them. And they're the biggest problems on the show. And so they're going to kill somebody like Bellamy. You watch. They're going to kill somebody that we love and give a shit about and leave us with garbage like Abby and Kane.
It would be a big mistake to kill Bellamy in service to Octavia, and I hope it doesn't happen. That's a worrisome prediction you've made, my friend, and I hope we don't have to see that happen. It would be a bad idea.
I could see Octavia killing Echo and then turning to Bellamy and being like, now you know how it feels.
Oh, because of Lincoln. Yeah.
Lincoln.
I'm just a little like more than a little happy. So they have made most of the Sky Crew, Tree Crew people, like, you know, Wan Crew, are cannibals and are supposed to be sympathetic because they had no choice. Meanwhile, Dio's crew are rapists and child murderers and other kinds of horrible their crimes are bad enough they were sent to a mining colony in space, and they are also being made sympathetic with the exception of Rory McCreary now. Like, we have a serial killer who is Abby's they have raised the stakes to a point that I don't know. I don't even know what I'm trying to say here, except that it's really problematic for me to have main characters and to be told that I should feel sympathetic that they became cannibals. Like, I don't see any scenario in any television show where it's acceptable to be like, they're cannibals, but they had no choice. I just watched The Terror, where, why am I watching shows this year where tons of people are becoming cannibals, but in The Terror, they were forced to be cannibal. Did you read The Terror? Did you watch The Terror?
No.
So in The Terror, their ship, it's like 1820, and their ship gets iced in the ice in the Arctic for like 3 years, and they're starving to death, and they're dying of scurvy and everything, and they eat the sled dogs and whatever. And this one guy who was clearly positioned as being dangerous and crazy for episode after episode or episode then decides they're going to be cannibals. But the way it's positioned is every single person is like, they only do it because they're afraid their captain will kill them if they don't eat the food. But it's not, it's done so much better than this episode was done. And actually, they truly are starving to death and going insane, which they still had a year's worth of food. Like the problems I have with the Dark Year is that Kara early on says, we probably can last for a year, but after a year, you know, we're going to be out of food. And then Abby's like, we don't have any protein. We got to eat each other starting now. We can't wait a year. And like, cause then we'll be too skinny to nourish each other. What? Like, what about like, we have a whole year to solve the problem. Like Monty was in space and he solved the problem. Right. Like there was no discussion of like, we've got a year to solve it. Maybe in 6 months we'll start being cannibals, but for now let's like, try to come up with a solution. What? Like, why am I supposed to feel sorry for these people? And the Terror, one guy actually pulled. Yeah. No, I'm sorry.
There was quite a few people from Sky Crew that were farmers. There's people from the farm that are there that maybe could have figured something out.
Isn't that the whole point of why Diaz doesn't want to kill them? Because they're farmers? And she wants them to come live with her and help her farm this place, okay. Right? It's problematic to say the least. And clearly we both feel passionately about this because we've been ranting about it for a while. And we're both really angry. And we should be. Really good show that went downhill really, really fast.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm tired of being angry. Right. You got anything else you want to finish up with it, or are we good?
No, let's get away from our angry show and go to a happy show. Well, I mean, we can't be
Preacher.
Happy. Okay, let's talk about Preacher. Actually, I wasn't happy with Preacher this week.
Issues with Preacher, but you go first.
There are parts of Preacher that I really enjoyed this week. And there are parts of Preacher that are becoming a total bore. And I'm sick of Grandma and Angelville and all that. I'm getting a little bored with Grandma and her two little, like, yokel minions there and all of this, I they need to move on from that. I did kind of enjoy that ludicrous vampire guy that wants to be Cassidy's friend. I found that to be fairly amusing, and I wish we had seen more of Eugene and the Saint. But I'm growing a little bit tired of Angelville. More than a little bit. I'm ready for them to move on.
I am in agreement. Not only am I in agreement, I was actually confused by the beginning of the episode. Why is he in an orphanage?
I didn't get that at all. Is he supposed to be is he under 18 still? Like, why did... Yeah,
maybe.
I don't understand why Eugene was in an orphanage either. Is he under 18?
It's not like he has... I mean, he's walking around in a pair of boxers and a shirt. It's not like he has any ID on him. I was very confused. And the fact that the Saint found him already...
He went to Anvil, right? Like, he went to Anvil, and that's why he... and found that Anvil was destroyed. He like he's still like back at last season, right?
Well, he's he's current timeline, but he didn't know that Anvil was destroyed.
Right. Yeah, in terms of what he knows, his like knowledge is still because he was in hell all this time. I don't know why he went to an. At first, I thought he was in a shelter for people who were blown up in Anvil. But then when they're like, "Oh, you're in an orc," I didn't really. Yeah, I don't know. It's the least of the problems with this episode, maybe.
And then when he's, not once does he say to the saint, "I wasn't even supposed to be in hell." Not once does he like defend himself, or anything. He's just like, "Okay, whatever." Like when they walk, when they're walking off, they look like some kind of.
Yeah, they kind of did. They did kind of. I just to see more of that. I'd almost forgot. I was like, "Oh, Eugene, we haven't seen Eugene in a while, right?" I forgot that I missed him. So I'd like to see more of that. And I'm not a huge fan of the, what's he called, the Overfather, the Uberfather? What's that guy? I forget that guy's name. Allfather. I'm not a huge fan of that character, although you say he's from the comic book, right? And he's great in the comic book, did you say?
My call actually just dropped for a minute.
The Allfather.
I'm starting to wonder. Oh, the Allfather? Yes, he's from the comic.
I wonder if the government is listening to us, and that's why you are losing me every week.
What'd you say?
Maybe the government is listening, and they're cutting you off. And that's why your phone call drops.
What did you want to know about the Allfather?
Well, I'm not a fan of those scenes or that character. I mean, I understand that he's a parody of the excess of like religion or whatever, and there's a point to be made there. But I don't really. I'm not sure that I don't know. The Grail is problematic for me. Sometimes I like the Grail. Sometimes I really don't like what they're doing with the Grail, and I wish they would move it along.
The Grail is very over the top, as you can see from the Allfather. And it's funny because the thing about it is, there's a mutiny going on in the Grail that, you can tell the Allfather is suspicious as he says, "Now let's talk about Jesse Custer." So it's like this all-powerful religious group who's going to bring upon the next Messiah, and they can't even see eye to eye on who that should be, So it's another story it's a story in a story. And the Allfather is just a pain in the ass. Definitely a parody of being a little overzealous.
Cassidy was the best part of the episode, I think, which it was interesting because that's a side trip, right? Cassidy's story is a side story. I'm guessing that's not in the comic book,
so
right?
Yes. That was fun.
It
so
was,
great.
Right?
I enjoyed that so much. That was fun.
I enjoyed it too, especially the part where the vampire wants
a
friend, and he's like, the part where the guy's like, "I just really wanted a friend," and like it hadn't maybe really occurred to Cassidy that he has no friends. Not just because he's upset about the whole because he's going to outlive every single person he's ever going to meet, right? And that's really what. Yeah.
And how awkward was that phone call between Tulip and Cassidy?
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, and so, we robbed a bank, and...
Yeah. Yeah, that was really horrible.
But, yeah, I'm with you. I'm over Anvil. They need to move on from the story. Although, I got to say, TC running down the road with the goat was pretty funny.
it was.
It was great because the cops are like, "We're on our way to a bank robbery." And they're like, "Yeah, well, it's TC that's in the zoo," and they're like, "Ah, shit." true. Yeah. Let them steal shit from the bank. We got to deal with TC. That's how bad he is.
Yeah.
That girl will never be the same.
No. Poor thing. Yeah, we agree. It's time to move on from Angelville. It's now repetitive. Like, how many times now are we going to have them try to leave? Grandma's cursed them. They can't leave. Let's try to get away. And like, just get on with it, right?
Especially
just get
now,
on with it and move on. Because
especially now that her and Tulip are linked, you know? So it makes it very problematic. We need to unlink them and just move on.
Yeah. And it looks like they're going to have to ask for the Grail's help to get out of there, I guess.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's, and honestly, I can't wait for them to get more involved with each other. You know, I love the back and forth and the one-upsmanship that they all try to get going on each other, but it's definitely in everybody's best interest for Jesse to get the word back.
Yeah. I hope that'll happen soon. That's sort of the whole point. That's like the whole point of the show. Like that was you know, last year, the major thing of the show.
Yeah, because it's kind of made, and it's funny because, you know, it's like, I guess they did what they did taking it away because he's kind of all powerful with it, but it's made the show less than what it should be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't always use it, and it doesn't always work necessarily. But that's the only way they're going to probably be able to move on from this storyline, is he's going to get his soul back so that he can use the word again and say, Grandma, release Tulip. And then they'll release Tulip and, you know, we can move on finally.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I mean, I hope it happens soon because I'm over it, you know? I really feel like they've drug it too far.
I think so too. I think maybe they have invested a lot in this set, right? Like, not that they just invested money, but they've put a lot of effort into the set. They have done a lot of work to create the world of Angelville, and they've got the whole like estate and all that's been done. And I feel like sometimes a show then gets bogged down spending too much time at a thing that they've developed. You know, sort of like Herschel's Farm in season 2 of Walking Dead, where they had built this.
Oh, which we wanted to move on from that too.
Yeah, or the prison in Walking Dead.
We got very tired of Herschel's Farm.
Yeah, yeah. And they need to like divest themselves from those characters in that location and move on. I'm ready for the next phase of the story.
Yeah.
And I think we all are. So. All right. Got anything else there? Or you want to move along?
Actually, here's something funny, and I'm actually looking it up right now.
Go
ahead.
To see
if they actually shot in New Orleans. I want to see if they did. They did actually shoot in New Orleans for the season.
Oh, great.
The reason I wanted to see that was because I swear to God, the bar that Cassidy and what's his face were in, the other vampire, I forget his name now.
Yep.
Lord
of the Blood or whatever.
I swear to God, I've been in that bar. Because as soon as I saw it, I was like, that looks really familiar. And I was like, and as they moved around, like there was things, I was like, that over, I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure when I was in New Orleans that I was in that bar. Pretty sure
that's
right in the first quarter.
That's cool.
I've been there. Been in New Orleans once in my life for Mardi Gras, and I'm pretty sure I was in that bar. I was in a lot of bars that night.
Yeah, when they're probably shooting in some of the most iconic New Orleans-ish places they can find.
Very true.
Yeah.
So not one of the greatest episodes, but better than some stuff we see on TV.
I enjoyed the bank heist. I enjoyed the bank heist.
Yes, I was just going to say that. That was fun. The bank was
definitely
a lot
of fun. And it had sort of a Ocean's 11 quality to it that I enjoyed.
You know, And I agree with that completely. And I felt that way because did you notice the music? It kind of had that Ocean's 11 type music to it too.
That sort of old-timey but funky,
Yeah. It definitely had that bank heisty music.
Yeah, bank heisty music, retro-y, you know, like Tulip's wardrobe was retro. Her behavior was what retro, and that she gave that sort of like Southern belle woman kind of thing. Like it was that was a really fun scene. They're really good at that kind of stuff. They're really good at that highly stylized violence, and also the highly stylized like look in the caper scenes. They're great at.
But nothing beats
that was a lot
having
of fun.
To lick. Nothing beats having to lick the touchpad.
What the hell was that? That was crazy. Yeah. That was insane. Ugh. How gross.
And then Jesse having to kiss her to get her DNA as opposed to her spinning in his face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Poor Tulip. Why did she put up with this man?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because she loves him.
Actually, I think the hair style, it was, if they'd done her hair a little different, I would say, without a doubt, this is what they did. But I think what they did with Tulip when she dressed up with the blonde wig, I think it was kind of a shout out to the comic book, because in the comic, Tulip is actually a white girl with blonde hair.
Oh, right.
So
right, yeah.
So when she got all dolled up there, I think that was just kind of a shout out to the comic saying, hey, here you go, here's the blonde hair.
That was cool, yeah. That's a good catch there.
Her hairstyle is a little different, but
not that kind of bob, but that probably is what it is. You're right. Good eye there. Good eye.
So, for now on to depressing stuff, I guess.
The series finale of Colony.
Which I must say, season finale. Not such a great series finale.
Well, you
really
are right.
NBC, Universal. In today's day and age, with all the technology we have and social media, there's absolutely no reason that they couldn't have called Hughes or one of the other people on the show and said, hey, we're not happy with things. There's a possibility we're going to cancel you guys. You might want to write something that can work both ways. Because the finale was the only thing left when they announced the cancellation.
Yeah. I mean, they canceled it late, which on the one hand, I'd like to think they canceled it late because they've been giving it as long as they could and that they stuck with the show. Like, some shows get canceled early. Some shows get canceled after the second episode, right? So they did give the show, I think, some time to improve its ratings.
Right, but
you know,
there was no investment, you know what I mean? This show's been on for 3 years. There's investment in it. People are, you know.
There is, but although when a show is getting bad ratings, do you throw good money after bad, right? Like, I think they should. I agree with you, but I feel like I could maybe see the business side of it. I mean, it had really...
Oh, I agree. And I agree, and they gave it every chance they could. But the fact that they were in that mindset of we're giving it every chance we can to try and renew it, why not tell somebody, hey, we're not sure which way we're going to swing here, so why don't you guys shoot something that could be a series finale? Because this is not something that they just all of a sudden said, all right, we're canceling it. You can't tell me it was a split decision all of a sudden. It's something they've been thinking about.
No. So I'm Googling it, and they were getting 2.2 million viewers in season one when they premiered, and they're down to 1.3 million now with only less than 400,000 in the 18 to 49 rules, and 394,000 people in 18 to 49 is bad, right?
Right. Which, like I said, means that they've been thinking about it. So tell somebody.
They've been watching it.
That,
I mean, the move to Canada.
The episode itself was good.
I think it was a good episode. Yeah. I mean, definitely. I think it was a good episode. I think it, I'm having a problem with my computer here. I think it was a good episode. I think that, it definitely, I mean, you're right that it was a great season finale and a horrible, horrible series finale. This is a show that deals in big cliffhangers, and they gave us a huge cliffhanger, right? Like a game-changing kind of a cliffhanger at the end. There's no way that I can, like, think about this in a way that sometimes you get canceled early, but you know, like, what you think might have happened, right? And there's no way to even. We can talk about the episode. I got to say, one thing I really appreciated is that the last thing we saw was Josh Holloway in a miniskirt in a little loincloth. So I did appreciate that.
There you go.
Did get to say, yep. But look, that's a huge cliffhanger, right? Like he's going up to the whatever to beat the Outliers or yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. How do you feel about the way it was all left, where the characters are all like, let's pretend that it's a season finale, okay, and not a series, and that we're gonna get more.
Right.
All of our characters are left apart from each other.
I liked a lot of what they did with it.
What'd you like?
I like the fact that Katie is stuck outside the wall, that she's locked out. They locked all the gates. The refugee when the war started, she's still in the bubble, but she can't get back into the main part of Seattle.
Yeah.
That's where all the refugees
were. She can't get back to town. Yeah. Yeah.
I like the separation.
And the kids kids are in town. You like that?
Get me fucking started with the kids. I hate the kids. Well, not the kids. I have no problem with Gracie. I hate Bram. That is actually the best part about the show being canceled. I never have to look at him again.
Well, there's that. He really, his character did not go in a way this season that was good. Right?
I mean, how are you going to sit there and say to your mother, who has done everything to keep you alive, and say the stuff he said to her? And the worst part about it was, he's just as guilty as they are. He's like, oh, mom and dad said they weren't going to do that stuff anymore, and they did it anyway. Let's see, Bram, where were you, and why did you get sent to the factory back in L.A.? Because you and your science teacher there were doing something you know damn well you shouldn't have been doing. You then started going under the wall and going on supply runs. So that's kind of like your mom and dad, okay? This season, or actually at the beginning of this season, you're in the woods doing something your parents don't even know about, making communications and charting things and doing this, which were all good things. So how are you going to get mad at your mother for trying to do the right thing? How are you going to, you know, they're doing this to create a better world for you kids. And you're going to be a snotty little piece of shit, basically.
I think that the problem is that they regressed Bram emotionally and maturity level back to a season one Bram. And he's not behaving like someone who's been in the trenches and been through it with his family. He's mad that he wasn't allowed to kill Snyder. He also, I feel like, you know, Bram, there's a part of Bram that's reacting from a place of losing, like his instinct to protect Gracie comes from losing Charlie, right? And I feel that's not well portrayed or articulated in these episodes, that we're not really seeing Bram mourn, right? I mean, I feel like that's his motivation, but we're not seeing him mourn Charlie. and want to protect Kitty for that reason. We're seeing him as a petulant teenager who's mad at his parents and not like as a big brother protector, really. And so I think that was really done wrong. And I'm not like, I think he regressed. I think we're seeing season one baby teenager, not a grown man who's fought in the war, really. That bothers
me. I've always had problems with Bram. And that's the thing, because he's never been a consistent character. He's kind of been, he's been back and forth like this throughout the entire run of the show. You either get whiny Bram, or you get one Bram that understands and is actually useful. And we ended up with useless.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what I thought was going to happen with him? When was part of that special unit, and they were going, and they were deployed, and they're like, oh, somebody's trying to break in. There's hostiles. I thought for sure he was going to come face-to-face with his father when they broke in, when they went back to the armory.
That would have been kind of cool.
I thought for sure that was going to happen. But did you notice that Bram, I think Bram's the only one that survived that onslaught.
Well, I definitely agree with you that I thought he was the only one who survived. And as I watched it, I felt like, well, Bram's the only one who's experienced. Like, these are community, somehow these people in Seattle, I don't know what's going on, because Seattle was renditioned. Every single person in Seattle was killed, and then it's repopulated. And presumably the people who came to Seattle are people who have fled other colonies and came on foot or by car or whatever. Like, there are people that have survived some shit to get there. And yet somehow this community patrol that he joined are clearly a bunch of, like, inexperienced people. And I felt like the reason Bram, like, you see how Bram ducked behind the wall and took cover, and like, I thought he survived because Bram's a kid who has experience and knew what to do, and everybody else was like, oh,
right.
Shit, they're shooting
absolutely.
At us. Boom, we're all dead, right?
And you know what?
Yeah.
Well, two things. I knew it wasn't going to end well for them to begin with, but the real clue was when his girlfriend's father, who was a coward, says, you all go ahead. I'm going to coordinate from back here. I thought, okay, well, they don't want to kill him, so this isn't going to end well.
Yeah.
But he's a coward.
Yeah.
He knows shit's about to hit the fan, and he don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he was going to be a bigger role. Like, I told you a couple weeks ago, I thought he was going to betray Bram would say something stupid and betray the Bowmans, and they didn't go in that direction. They escalated this to all-out war.
Who knows? They could have. Who knows?
Well, he could, if it went on.
We're not getting a season 4, so we don't know what the plan is.
Yeah. Yep. So I mean, it is good that he got Gracie to a place where she's safe. I mean, it gave Katie a storyline. I kind of liked how, so Will and Katie sort of make up in this episode. I felt that came a little too fast and wasn't earned, that they were like, have one conversation and they're like, okay, but I get that war was coming and there wasn't time. They have to be united to find their kids, right? Like, bottom line is he's still mad at Katie and he's still really broken inside, and they might not, their marriage might not make it, except that, oh, the aliens are attacking, so we have to like work together now. And so I get that. I did like how they set it up that they set up very nicely Katie's mission for next year, is to try to find the kids and put the family back together while Will goes off and does his outlier thing.
Right. Yeah,
I kind of like that.
I think it was a great job of setting everything up for season 4 while tying up all the necessary loose ends of season 3. I thought it was probably one of the best season finales I've ever seen of something. It was done really, really well. And no episode of His Colony is complete without talking about our good buddy Alan Snyder.
I had a little
bit of an issue here, but
yeah. Kill Kellogg. The
yeah.
Kill Kellogg.
Oh yeah. Yeah, so he was outplayed by Kind every step of the way this season, right? I would have been looking forward to see more of Kind's because of his brilliance, which we can talk about more in a few minutes. But he outplayed Snyder, and yet Snyder is he's a crazy character. He's become so – it's like he's gained confidence from his survival thing in the woods with Katie and Will. He's much more confident, much more ruthless again. Like, he's right back in it. And I was surprised to see that moment of – especially what?
With Helena dead.
Do you think they're all dead or they were unconscious? I think they're dead. Could they have been knocked unconscious by the – the aliens seem to emit some kind of vibration,
like,
right?
Yeah, I feel like they're dead, but I could be wrong. But it doesn't matter because we're never going to know.
Yeah. Well, with them wiped out, it gives the opportunity for Snyder to become the leader of the collaboration government, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think, AJ? So one thing that really stuck in my mind was as the war is breaking out and Snyder is doing his thing and he's talking to his friend there, when he says, he has this moment where he's questioning and says, what if we've chosen the wrong side? Like, we aligned ourselves with these aliens and now some better aliens are coming and the war's breaking out and what if we've chosen the wrong side? And I was kind of surprised to see him. On the one hand, I thought, that's not the Snyder I've seen these last 6 weeks. But then I thought, oh, it is the Snyder I've seen for the last 3 years, though, right?
Yeah.
And then he mans up and says, well, I got to play the hand I'm dealt. So I chose these aliens to stick with them.
Yeah, he definitely, that's a good scene. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
But even the scene, I like, you know, even the scene when he's got everybody at the table and he's like, I know all your loyal to Kinds, but I'm in charge now. So here's the deal. He's like, and if you can't be loyal to me, you can leave right now. No hard feelings. And the one guy gets up on me and he's like, not the choice I would have made. And I think it's ironic because it gets bookended with him shooting I don't remember the character of Kellogg's name or the character, the guy that played, you know. It's
he
ironic
was Kellogg's
he
right.
Stays.
He was Kynes's right hand.
Yeah, he stays and gets shot.
Yeah.
Because they know that he's the one that knocked out the network.
Yeah. That was kind of surprising. But Snyder didn't shoot him. Snyder had the other guy shoot him, right?
Well, yeah.
Snyder wield the gun?
Snyder never actually pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
Snyder never
That's
actually
not
shoot
way.
Anybody. He gave the command. He just nodded his head. That was nice of him, though, to have the girl sitting next to him that was covered in gray matter, some white or something.
Yeah. He's, I also liked how it ended where, Snyder's in his penthouse apartment or wherever he is, and the bombs are coming and the shield is up. And so the aliens have, because Will took the outliers to the factory, not the factory, but wherever they went, the aliens delivered and put a shield around Seattle and saved them for the time being. And so now they're trapped in there or protected in there or whatever. I find it – so I have a little bit of a problem with the entire premise of the alien invasion in that these aliens are so powerful that they can just wipe out Helena with, their vibration thoughts coming out of their head. Helena, everybody's – they're so powerful, I don't know what Will and the Outliers are supposed to be. I don't get what, first of all, it's not really well explained why this war is happening on Earth, why the Raps came here in the first place and decided that
they just ran.
Killing humans,
I guess. And like, building human super soldiers is their best defense against aliens who seem so clearly able, like, it just seems like not a... We saw in the beginning of the season how human super soldiers were just, like, booped, like, you know, killed in 1 second by the aliens. The premise of the alien war has been a really good mystery for a while, but as I watched these last couple of weeks, I'm like, wait a minute, why would they even come here? Why would you think we, puny and weak as we are, with no technology, like, they have to put so much investment into making humans into super soldiers, right? Like, what a giant pain in the ass running the Earth. Like, just go someplace else.
Well,
right?
I get the feeling that the rats were running away from the other aliens, and Earth was the first civilization they said, oh, look, people.
I guess. Useless people.
Wow.
Who, but maybe that would have been better explained as we got into the next season.
Well, yeah, I think that's a lot of it.
How about Broussard? I loved the Broussard storyline, except I never really saw Broussard as a reluctant leader. Like, Broussard is a natural leader, and people followed him. Katie followed him. People have followed Broussard since we've known him. Katie fell in with him. Amy fell in with him and immediately looked to him for leadership. And for him to not be willing, like, I always saw him as a leader. It was a little surprising to me to be like, time for you to lead, Broussard.
Well, I think because sometimes we don't see ourselves what other people see. You know what I mean? So, I mean, Amy feels like he's a leader and tells him as much. But, I mean, prior to that, I mean, you know, Broussard came back from the war. You know, he was high ranking, but he still had somebody he answered to. And now, you know, he's got this resistance group, but it's a small group. They're, you know, it's quiet. He's not leading a big charge of people. This is different. You know, he's got all these people he's got to lead, you know, and it's come down to the nitty gritty here. And, you know, and now that, of course, he's all, you know, the other group of outliers show up. And it's even bigger now, you know?
And I think it could potentially be thousands of people. Like, Kynes had a big – Kynes was thinking three steps ahead. And if Will was able to put together 150 outliers without even really trying, and then, like, another basically 150 guys show up and are like, hey, Broussard, we're here to help. Like, how many could it be? It could be tons of people, right? Not just men, women also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But alas, we'll never know all the answers.
All right, so just for fun, how do you think it might end? If we had another season, what would happen?
I don't know. I mean, there's so many options on the table. I think ultimately the mind-bending aliens would ultimately win. Because I don't see Kynes as siding with the wrong side. So, but I think it would be I don't know. I mean, I think ultimately the humans come out on top and have to rebuild, maybe. Obviously, you know, I think maybe for whatever reason, the mind-bending aliens, because of his relationship with that one alien, that Kynes had in the test tube there, whatever you want to call it.
You had to deal with them, yeah.
Now, I think they wipe out the rats and they just leave the humans be, whoever's left.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the invisible predator-type aliens are probably the good ones, right, so to speak. Like, the aliens that came down and were like, humans, somebody worse is coming, you've got to help us defeat them or they'll wipe you out, maybe was a bit of a story.
You know,
find out that
really see either one being quote unquote good or bad. I mean, the raps, while their reasoning to themselves sounds good, it's still enslavement. It's still saying you're a superior race and you're making another species do your bidding because you're terrified of getting wiped out by this other race. The predator type, as you like to call them, doesn't mean they're good because they're going around, they're chasing the rocks around the galaxy, trying to wipe them out, you know, and they apparently have a history of doing it to other worlds. So I don't think there's necessarily a good one. It's just, I think there might be enough honor in them to go with whatever agreement Kynes has got set up.
I think, what do you think about, what do you think about Snyder? So let's say we had to predict where things go from here. Do we think, I think Snyder would have to die in the next season. Possibly he would die changing sides and trying to save humanity. Like, you particularly have talked a lot about how Snyder might be a total jerk and a weasel and a coward and out for his own interest, but he does often believe that he's acting to save lives. Right? So would he ever
Snyder.
Be that? What?
Snyder, I could see him changing sides for his own benefit. Snyder's not going to change sides because he all of a sudden has an epiphany. He's going to say, oh, crap, I need to change sides or I'm going to die. That's who Snyder is. And I don't have a problem because that's who Snyder is. So I'm okay with that. Do I see Snyder getting to a point where he sacrifices himself for somebody else? Probably not. Unless the only person I could see him sacrificing himself to save is
Gracie.
What was her name?
Gracie,
thank you.
Gracie.
I could see him sacrificing himself to save Gracie. I can't see him sacrificing himself for Will, Katie, or Bram. Gracie could definitely benefit from a Snyder sacrifice. But that's the extent of that. But, I mean, I see Snyder to continue to go up the ladder. And keep progressing and keep going, you know, kind of, I could totally see him having a line like, I'm still alive. You don't have a better choice. The other people are dead, you know?
He basically kind of said
it would have to be done in a way where he's still on the show and still interacting with the rest of our cast.
Yeah. I don't think that will kill him or Bram or like, I think that's done. Right. We saw that go. We did see in this episode where Snyder makes his pitch and he's like, Will, I'm asking you to turn yourself in, all you outliers. It's the only chance for humanity. He's kind of a jerk to Will. He kind of demeans him and is an asshole about it. And then he's like, whatever, go. I hope I never see you or your family again. I felt like that was a loaded statement. Like, I hope I never see your family again.
I think it was sincere.
I think it was so sincere, he meant it on a lot of levels. He meant it like, you've been a thorn in my side. You've been nothing but bad for me. But also, if I see you, it reminds me of this child who I loved who died because of my actions. Right? Like, it's painful for him to be around them.
Right.
That's what I do.
Funny, actually, because no, that's fine, and you might be onto something there, which unfortunately we'll never know. But it was kind of funny because, you know, knowing that it's the last episode, when he says that, I was like, oh, shouldn't be a problem.
yep, because he's going up to the whatever it's called, not the factory, but whatever.
To take it a different direction, it could have also been foreshadowing in a way. With him saying that for next season, next season they might have never interacted with each other, you know, through next season, especially with Will and being an outlier and on the front lines.
Yeah.
So.
I disagree a little bit. I think that Snyder could be not redeemed. Per se, but that I think Snyder would die next season. Either he dies because he's been a weasel and a collaborator the entire time, or he dies because he somehow
realizes he made it. Like, could that, did we choose the same, the wrong side thing before shadowing, and would he attempt to change sides later and die? I don't know. I think that the Bowman family, having suffered the loss of Charlie this season, gets out intact next season. If there was one, they all live. Katie somehow gets the kids, finds them. Will somehow, even though he goes into a pod and gets brainwashed, somehow is able to fight his way back and lead a rebellion. Like, we did see in episode one or two, I don't know what episode it was, when they first got to Seattle. Remember we saw that scene where a guy broke out of a pod and tried to escape?
Yeah.
So that tells me that the pod people, let's call them the pod people, that the pod people outliers have some control of their own brains for at least some portion of their indoctrination, right? So could Will lead a rebellion up there? Probably, right? That's what we got to see. I mean, Will's not going to go and just become an automaton, right? So
yeah.
It's a very disappointing loss. The show, we just spent a long time talking about a show that we used to love, The 100, which is terrible now. We spent 6 weeks talking about how Colony was a terrible show, and it righted the ship. This was a good season. This was a good season finale, with good cliffhangers.
Yeah. I liked the first 3 weeks of the show. It was those 3 or 4 weeks at the camp that I was ready to kill somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, that was terrible. And I understand better why they did that now, having read about having to change cities, they were in and all this stuff, but they did a good job. They brought it, they came out of it. I don't know if they listened to the fans or if they just knew they were going wrong, but they fixed it. I'm sorry to see it go. We have really enjoyed
it. It was almost like that entire thing was just to kill Charlie.
Right? Yeah.
So, all right.
All right.
I guess that's it. Goodbye, Colony.
Yep.
We'll miss you.
Goodbye, Colony.
And next week, what?
Well, I was going to say, so with Jamie not here tonight, we did not talk about Winona Earp or Killjoys.
I forgot about Killjoys.
We will bring them back next week.
Yep, that's what I good thing you said something about Killjoys, because I was going to say something about Winona Earp, but I forgot about Killjoys again. And we'll have one less show to talk about next week, because we won't be talking about Colony anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So
I actually, I did watch Winona this week. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't love this week's episode, but we'll get it next week with Jamie. Yeah. We have room in our, all right. Sorry to talk over you there.
Well, thank you everybody for listening. That's okay. Thank you everybody for listening.
All right.
And we'll do it again next week. Good night.
All right. Good night. Bye.